Welcome back to Discerning Consciousness with your hosts, Mike and Antman.
Hi, everyone.
This episode, we will be discussing the topic of propaganda and how that controls most of your life without you knowing it.
And of course, this links into our last episode, Mike, which was all about social conditioning. So in essence, propaganda is how social condition actually takes place.
Yep, it's the means to the end.
Yeah, and as we've always with our podcast episodes, we'll start with a nice quote. Propaganda is defined as information, especially of a biased or misleading nature, used to promote a political cause or point of view. And something else I also found out, which was quite interesting, I didn't know this, is linked to the Catholic Church in terms of a committee of cardinals established in 1622 by Pope Gregory the 15th. And this was in order to propagate the Catholic faith at the time.
Yeah, well, that's a big part of propaganda. It's actually to propagate an idea.
Yeah. Also, as we know, propaganda is used as a means to subvert the truth or manipulate the truth. It'd be interesting to consider a quote that speaks of this by Joseph Goebbels. He says, "The lie can be maintained only for such a time as the state can shield the people from the political, economic and or military consequences of the lie. It thus becomes vitally important for the state to use all of its powers to repress dissent, for the truth is the mortal enemy of the lie, and thus by extension the truth becomes the greatest enemy of the state." I think that sums it up quite well, really.
Yeah. I mean, I have to admit, for especially Nazi Germany, I think that's when the first way we actually heard the term propaganda being used.
In a political sense.
Yeah, because it was during those days that they were trying to engineer the public perception to hate everyone else.
To hate the enemy.
Yeah, but in terms of the true purpose of propaganda, especially in terms of the state, it's always been there throughout the generations, going back from the very start of the kings and queens. Thousands of years ago to today, in terms of keeping control.
And obviously to propagate an idea, which is essentially what the word means as well, doesn't it? Also, Mike, it would be good to consider propaganda in terms of marketing and advertising. So in that vein, I have here the book Propaganda by Edward Bernays.
I was going to say, we can't talk about the subject without mentioning him. He is essentially the grandfather of the idea.
Yeah, and he was, of course, Freud's nephew, and he was the first to use psychological techniques, which we'll go into later, in terms of public relations, which is just another word for marketing, essentially.
I was going to say, like I was saying, how it's been used for centuries, it really didn't become focused until Edward Bernays came along. So it's been clunky beforehand, but he really kind of like collected it together and made it poignant.
And I suppose that was where it became more of a science.
Yes. Yeah, because beforehand everything was kind of like haphazardly done.
Yeah, and it became far more insidious and manipulative.
Well, of course, that's the result of it becoming scientifically done, because it's more effective.
And as I said, we have the book here in my hand. I have it even, I should say. It was published in 1928. It's a fascinating read. And the first two paragraphs of chapter one are absolutely fascinating. So I'll read those to you. And he says, "The conscious and intelligent manipulation of the organised habits and opinions of the masses is an important element in democratic society. Those who manipulate this unseen mechanism of society constitute an invisible government, which is the true ruling power of our country. We are governed, our minds moulded, our tastes formed, our ideas suggested, largely by men we have never heard of. This is a logical result of the way in which our democratic society is organised. Vast numbers of human beings must cooperate in this manner if they are to live together as a smoothly functioning society." So I thought that's really interesting, because he's actually saying that propaganda aids democracy in essence, which is kind of a controversial view.
Well, it's the result of how our society structures itself. Like you were saying in the book, You can't get away from the fact that we're all trying to live together, work together. And the only way that can be done smoothly is if we're all singing from the same songbook. And so it's a natural formation of the fact that we are, like I was saying before, we are social animals. So we want to be like everyone else.
So in essence, what Bernays is saying then, for democracy, it's dangerous if you've got people, the public, have all these different perspectives. So what they want is this, one perspective on things, i.e. driven by propaganda. Otherwise, it's dangerous if the public think for themselves.
Well, as far as the state's concerned, anyway.
Yeah. So we'll begin by looking at state propaganda, because it's the main mechanism through which fear is propagated in the public, and a sense of creating external enemies and divide and rule. So back to the First World War, and many of our listeners will be well aware of this particular form of propaganda, which was the Lord Kitchener poster, which was used as a recruiting tool during the First World War, with the famous words of "Your country needs you," which basically was used to invoke a sense of patriotism and guilt in those men who were not enlisting at the time during the First World War.
I was going to say, it was a big controversy at the time, the whole kind of like pacifist movement.
Yes, indeed, yeah. Also, again, a quote from a famous Nazi going by the name of Hermann Goering, who said, in terms of war and propaganda, he said, "Why, of course, the people don't want war. Why should some poor slob on a farm want to risk his life in a war when the best he can get out of it is to come back to his farm in one piece? Naturally, the common people don't want war, neither in Russia, nor in England, nor for that matter in Germany. That is understood. But after all, it is the leaders of the country who determine the policy, and it is always a simple matter to drag the people along, whether it is a democracy or a fascist dictatorship, or a parliament or a communist dictatorship. Voice or no voice, the people can always be brought to the bidding of the leaders. That is easy. All you have to do is tell them they are being attacked and denounce the peacemakers for lack of patriotism and exposing the country to danger. It works the same in any country." I think this is a really interesting quote, Mike, because immediately it brings to mind the whole Bush neocon era and the way in which after the attacks of 9/11, in the run-up to the Afghanistan war and the Iraq war, this is exactly what they used. You know, you're either with us or against the terrorists. You know, we're going to smoke them out. They use this very sort of crude them and us language to invoke fear, to demonise Osama bin Laden. You know, it's exactly the same technique.
Yeah. But I have to admit, even though we're mentioning propaganda in the time of war, the reason we're focusing on this at the moment is because it's where everything gets ramped up again.
It does, yeah. Because it's very much in your face,
yeah,
isn't it?
Propaganda is always happening all the time. It never stops happening.
Yeah.
It's just it has to work a lot harder to get us to hate an enemy.
Yeah, sure.
Because, you know, it can't propagate that idea. It can't sell the whole idea of you've got to hate those people without it working hard to do so.
Again, I'm minded of some recent events in the UK when we had Parliament voting on the bombing of Syria earlier in the year, and the press and the Conservative Party were having a go at Jeremy Corbyn, leader of the Labour Party, suggesting he was unpatriotic because he wasn't following the government line and going along with the war. And again, we can see it's clearly propaganda.
Yeah. It's terrible. But I have to admit, these days, we don't even call it propaganda, do we?
No, no.
Because that's got so many bad
negative connotations.
With the fact that it was associated with Nazi Germany.
Yeah, sure.
So these days, we like to call it spin.
Right. And the word spin actually comes from the word Svengali, which is like a trickster or a con artist. And then we think of master spin masters in terms of Alistair Campbell and Peter Mandelson, of course, and who were architects along with Tony Blair of the whole New Labour project. And the political spin in terms of that was rebranding old Labour into New Labour. So, of course, they were incorporating ideas around marketing and advertising. And that was a classic example of political spin whereby they were rebranding a product, essentially, which was the Labour Party for the new era, as they saw it.
But one thing we haven't mentioned, because we keep mentioning war and how propaganda is used, is to bring it up to a modern-day perspective of terrorism.
Yes.
So the amount of times terrorism is used with, well, propaganda and terrorism will almost go hand in hand.
Yeah, I'd say the whole war on terror is used to corral or get the masses in line, basically. You know, that's a key technique that's used.
Especially with the aspects of fear.
Yeah. Just mentioning again back to political spin. Of course, one of the main reasons why it's used is to sell an idea that might otherwise be unpopular to the electorate. So it might be an increase in taxation or a reduction in public spending. And the idea of political spin is you use words or you discuss the policy in such a way that it almost confuses the public, so they don't actually understand. So that's where the word spin comes from.
Yeah.
Selling a lie or manipulating the truth.
Yeah. And that uses certain techniques that I think we've mentioned before that goes under the guises of NLP.
Yes, yeah.
Where it will try and focus you in one direction of the argument and pretty much ignore the other side of the argument.
Yeah,
so
sure.
You're literally just thinking in certain ways.
Yeah, sure.
But I have to admit, that goes on to what we coming in the means of the propagation.
Yeah.
And for the last 100 years, that's essentially been in the realms of TV, news and radio.
So in the media generally. Yeah, it's interesting to consider about how the media in its infancy back in the 1920s and 30s obviously was mainly radio. And there's this quite fascinating instance or event that happened which really demonstrates the power of propaganda, as I say, even back in, it was 1938, and it was a broadcast on a radio station in the States called Mercury Radio, and they were broadcasting extracts from Orson Welles' War of the Worlds, very famous book of course, and there was an estimated 1 million listeners at that time, and they were actually believed that the extracts from the book were true and that America was under attack from Martians. And this actually again demonstrates the power of the media to shape public perception, and perhaps even more sinisterly, the suggestibility of human beings when they're under the influence of fear, which again is the main reason for propaganda, I would suggest. In terms of the media coming more up to date and the news obviously is one of the main sources of propaganda, isn't it?
Yes, especially like if it's a state-controlled
TV the BBC.
Station. Yes, it will literally toe the party line in terms of telling the country what it needs to hear at that time.
Yeah,
there are certain things that it will be deemed acceptable to tell the public and not acceptable to tell the public.
And that is in terms of airtime for certain issues. And I've noticed in recent weeks in the UK here, we have a big vote coming up on whether the UK should stay in the EU or not. And I've noticed watching some BBC news that it'll always lead with stories about announcements that Cameron, the Prime Minister, has made, or the Chancellor of the Exchequer saying, you know, we need to stay in the EU for economic reasons. And then the counter-arguments are down the news list.
They're downplayed.
And they're sort of, there's no real balance. Of course, what else I've noticed also in news is the way in which the stories are structured.
Yep. So there's normally a certain play in terms of how news done. So they tell you all the news stories to begin with, and then they start getting into them.
Yeah.
And it's normally like, bad things happen around the world, bad things happening in this country.
Yeah.
And, oh, look at this little kitten, isn't it so cute at the end?
And what that does is it just generates a sense of confusion and chaos in the mind of the viewing public. And they get this sense in which that's just the way of the world. You know, it's war, it's terrorism, it's natural disasters. There's nothing we can do about that. And I think this happens because there's no discussion or there's no nuanced debate or there's no... Do you know what I mean? It's just presented as, no, this is the way of the world.
Yeah. And even the stories themselves in terms of how they're presented. They're always used in a certain way. So it's never a clear understanding of what's going on within the story.
No.
It's immediately with the emotion of the event.
Yeah, sure. I mean, and we saw this recently with the refugee crisis, where the media only really began to take any serious interest when the boy, the Syrian boy, was washed up.
Yep. And suddenly it's got the emotion, everyone's feeling sorry, everyone's like, oh my god, I wouldn't like that to happen to my child.
It all became kind of very personalised then, didn't it?
But do you know what, the one interesting thing that has never been mentioned once in the refugee crisis, yeah?
Yeah.
Especially with all those boats bringing all those people over.
Yeah.
Is it's the people traffickers that are getting paid...
Yes.
...hundreds of thousands of pounds doing
Absolutely,
this, yeah?
Yeah.
And they haven't been brought up once in the news.
Again, that's because that's...
Because
like,
it's an illegal trade.
Of course, yeah.
And yet, they're essentially getting away with this scot-free. Sure. Not being mentioned.
That's a great point you make, Mike, because a lot of the times, as I said before, the news is presented in a way that there's nothing we can do about it, you know, in spite of the best intentions of political leaders. They never say, actually, in a lot of cases, it's the West... It's causing these very things that are happening.
I was going to say, a lot of these are from Syria at the moment.
Yeah.
But the only reason they're wanting to leave Syria is because for the last 5 years, or 8 years it being, America has been drone bombing this country to oblivion.
Yeah, sure.
And so, of course, they're wanting to get away from that country.
Just for their own personal survival.
Yeah. But at the same time, they're then spending every penny they have to these people traffickers to get them to the West.
Mm.
And yet, all the news is focusing on is, you know, where they're going to put them. Not actually, it's these people traffickers that are causing the problem.
Yeah, they only ever present things in a way in which it's just, they don't look at the deeper perspective of what's actually going on.
And the underlying causes.
And the underlying causes. Because if they did that, people would begin to question what they're hearing and maybe, you know, investigate online. But the mainstream news is all about keeping people within the matrix, within a very narrow perspective.
Yes, definitely. And because they do that on the news, they get away with some horrendous atrocities.
Yeah.
And one of the big ones for me is... what airtime they give to what stories. Because you'll always find that a certain, you know, embarrassing truths are released by the government at the same day as some major news story in another part of the world.
You get shifted.
And then suddenly the focus is entirely on the major disaster in another part of the world.
Mm.
And suddenly the embarrassing truths that the government's released are not even mentioned.
Yeah. And then, but later on they can say, but we told you.
Yeah.
But yeah, it wasn't in the headlines.
It was in the fine print down at the bottom. If you get the magnifying glass out, you might be able to see it.
Yeah. The other thing about the broadcast, the news, which I find is interesting, they'll never retract. So they'll never go back and say, oh, actually, it was a lie. I can remember, I think it was about 2013, and the Americans wanted to bomb Syria. And that was at the time when they were saying that Assad was gassing or using chemical weapons on his own people. And it latterly came out that this was just a complete lie. And I actually remember seeing the news on the BBC saying Assad forces are, you know, shelling their own people with chemical weapons. I don't know what the technical phrase is. It was just a blatant lie. But you never see the retraction later on. The BBC comes out and, you know, will admit that...
Tell you what, the most interesting one you say about that, obviously when Libya was the main focus in the world.
Yeah,
they were saying how what was the Libya's leader again?
Oh, Colonel Gaddafi.
Yeah. So when Gaddafi was in charge in Libya, they were making him out to be the biggest monster going.
Yeah.
But a couple of years after his untimely death, they actually did, BBC actually did make a whole documentary on how he was so good for Libya.
Exactly.
He made it prosper.
Yeah. Well, just one anecdote was, for new homeowners, it was something like $20,000 or $30,000, the equivalent given towards the cost of a mortgage or...
So they could get their lives going.
Yeah, exactly.
The whole documentary saying how it was the best thing for Libya there's ever been, and yet at the same time, a couple of years beforehand, they were actually saying he was a monster and he should be disposed.
Exactly, yeah.
So they're always contradicting themselves.
Yeah, sure. Also, in terms of news, just quickly, Mike, we'll touch upon the idea of news values, which means that certain stories or certain people, shall we say, take precedence over others. I'll give a good example of this is if a refugee boat, sinks and hundreds are killed off the, say, the coast of an African country or Asia, it'd probably be a byline on the news. If that happened in Europe, North America or Australasia, you'd be hearing about it for weeks. Yeah. So in essence, they're still human beings, but certain human beings from certain places in the West have far more value,
which is
disgraceful. Really.
Well, in one way, it kind of makes sense, but another way, it doesn't.
I know it makes sense in the fact that they would say, well, we can relate to the Europeans and North Americans because they're more like us, etc.
Again, it's all about the locality. So things that happen closer to you are more important than things that happen to than the other side of the world.
Yeah, sure.
Even though that's just been a natural thing that's happened throughout for the generations, because we're still getting used to the fact that the world's getting a smaller place.
Yeah, sure, yeah.
So 100 years ago, it might take you a long time to hear about a disaster on the other side of the world.
Yeah, sure.
Now you can hear about it instantly.
Yeah.
But at the same time, because it's not in your perception,
you
rely more on, say, the news media or the internet to hear about this information.
Yeah, sure.
But the more you rely on other people for information, the less accurate you can rely on that information. Mm.
I mean, something else, again, that I heard on the BBC a few days ago is our listeners will be aware there's been a huge earthquake in Ecuador.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, hundreds of people have died. The way in which it was on BBC Radio 4 News, the way in which they advertised it, I thought was very instructive in terms of propaganda, news propaganda. Because in order to make the story interesting for the UK-based listener, UK and Ireland, actually, I should say, they focused on the fact that an Irish teacher who was working out in Ecuador was killed, unfortunately, which is very tragic. They didn't talk to one local Ecuadorian to talk of their experience. You know, have you lost a relative? How? Do you see what I mean again?
It's always the case, especially like terrorist bombings that will happen, say, in the Middle East.
Yeah.
They won't actually report it over here.
No.
Unless Britons die in the situation.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And in terms of, I mean, we can't not mention Palestine, of course. What I always find interesting is that, say there's an incident or in the past there's been an intifada, which we know means an uprising in that area. They'll always put out a spokesperson for the Israeli military. But he or she will always be dressed in civilian clothes. They'll be in a studio and they'll be seeming to speak in a very civilized way. But when they speak to a representative from Palestine, they'll be like shouting into a microphone, you know. And it's just, again, it's the
it's
representation.
The
it's the perception. Because, of course, we haven't mentioned that. The key thing about propaganda is perception management.
Yes. So it's showing you what you can see and what you can't see.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, which is obviously very important, yeah.
Right, so one big thing we have to talk about when we're talking about the propaganda of, say, a state, a way of being of a country, would be to talk about religion. We can't ignore that.
Yeah.
Because even though it's less relevant today, it has its claws in a society going back thousands of years, and we can't ignore that.
Yeah, I agree with saying in sort of modern Western society, political propaganda probably plays less of a role than it once did before the establishment of, say, the political class in the sort of 17th and 18th century. Yeah.
Yeah. But even now, in today, with the religion side of things, you've got to think of with the Muslims. And the fact is, the TV news are always trying to paint that every single Muslim is a terrorist, which we know is a complete lie, but at the same time, that's what it's trying to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's perception management. And interesting, you should mention this, Mike, but the recent terrorist attack at the airport in Brussels, immediately they were saying, well, it's Islamic State. And, you know, before they have any credible evidence, the news outlets are already attributing it to you know, some Islamic group or other.
Yeah, because they're jumping on the bandwagon and they've got to paint the fear in the minds of the people.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. And in terms of... So, obviously, also with religion, there are certain extreme views or ideologies that come under propaganda, aren't they?
Well, this is the thing. Religion has always tried to set the standard for the society in which it lives.
Yeah.
And whatever society you come from, the religion will try and reinforce the ideas of that society. So, coming from a Western society, we obviously live in Britain, this whole country has been brought up with a very Christian upbringing. And because of that, there's certain motifs which it reinforces, which obviously from the Bible and certain ideas from that. But at the same time, if you, say, came from India, the religion that they've got there actually tries to reinforce, well, in the old days at least, the caste system that they used to have. You know, that they used to have in their ways of how... even if you were a bad baker, because you were brought up to be a baker, it's better to be a bad baker than it is to be a good something else, because that is your position in life. And that was what their religion tried to reinforce, because that's what their society was telling them.
So what you're talking about is a different kind of role for religion in countries like India than, say, in the West.
Well, it's not a different role. It's always been about reinforcing the way of life.
Yeah, I just think in countries like India in the modern era, it's still quite prominent, but in countries like Britain, it's not quite
so. It's reduced in power, and that's because more people are waking up and thinking for themselves. And that's why, I have to admit, less people are following the status quo of the system.
That's interesting. Right, moving on now to consider propaganda in terms of marketing and advertising, which of course takes us back to...
Edward Bernays,
yes. And in terms of marketing and advertising, one of the key mechanisms that are used is fear and shaming.
Well, it's either going to be the shaming or the emotional happiness side of things. So, you know, in the old days, you had the idea that items or products were tried to sell to you to solve a particular problem or a deficit you had.
So they were based on the functionality of that product, essentially.
But nowadays, it's all about the emotional aspect of the product. So, especially with advertising these days, it's the idea that buy this product, it will make you happy. Or buy this product, it will cover your shame.
And, of course, what else, as we know, advertisers do is create needs that don't even exist. So I think, put in mind of going back in the day, the Listerine.
Yep, so Listerine was originally sold as a cleaning product, a household cleaning product.
Not something you'd want to gargle on then, Mike.
No. but it actually came up with the term halitosis.
Right.
And it'll even admit that itself.
In its own documents.
It didn't. The term didn't exist before that, and they came up with the term because how else are they going to shame you unless they make it sound fancy and scientific?
Also, there's this thought that advertisers are trying to tap into our hidden desires and passions, and we can see this in terms of certain advertising literature where it has quite a phallic element to it, albeit it will be sort of masked in terms of being an ice cream cone or you know, like a bottle of lager or something, but there'll be a very phallic overtone.
I was going to say sexuality is often used within advertising because it's always the slogan of sex sales. Well, of course everyone desires sex. It's
part of our animal nature.
You can't avoid it. But they will play on our fears, our loves, our desires. Because how else are they going to make us buy products that we don't even want?
As you said earlier, this idea about moving marketing, advertising in terms of our desires and wishes rather than fulfilling a need, this was picked up by a chap called Paul. This was picked up by a chap called Paul Mazur, M-A-Z-U-R, who was a Wall Street banker. And this is from Adam Curtis's The Centre of the Self Wikipedia page, which for anyone out there is a fascinating documentary to watch, The Centre of the Self, which talks about all of this idea, these ideas. He said in 1927, we must shift America from a needs to a desires culture. People must be trained to desire, to want new things, even before the old have been entirely consumed. Man's desires must overshadow his needs. Again, I think that's very interesting.
Yeah, well, that brings on to the idea of, in the old days,
yeah,
businesses and corporations existed to serve the needs of society.
Mm.
Today, through propaganda, society exists to serve the needs of the corporations.
Yeah, absolutely. And this feeds into, of course, materialism, which is the whole idea of buying stuff to make you happy, of course.
Yes, because through propaganda of the state, it has actually made people less aware of who they truly are.
Mm.
And because they don't know who they truly are, they feel a hole inside themselves.
Mm.
And they almost have to fill it with the Burger King, the KFC, or go to the shop and buy myself some new clothes to make myself feel good.
I mean, I'm thinking in terms of...
That's why they call it retail therapy.
Retail, yeah. In terms of the brand and identification with it, is Apple. I mean, you can almost see, can't you, when you're out, when people have got their Apple tablet or laptop, the smugness on.
Yes.
You know, I'm an Apple man or woman.
Yeah, so this whole idea of materialism, to buy things to make yourself feel good, is almost at the centre of our society.
It's the core, isn't it, in the West? It's the...
But I have to admit, at this point, it's interesting to know, a bit of an offshoot here, a bit of a tangent.
Yeah,
that
we like tangents.
It's the materialism that is the whole reason why spirituality is not accepted within society.
No, and why it's so easily condemned.
Yeah, because we almost see materialism as the only thing that exists.
Mm.
If I can't touch it, it's not there. If I can't see it, it's not there.
Sure.
But science has known for the last 100 years that materialism is false.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
You know, we know about, you know, the electro fields and the magnetic fields. We know that there's more beyond what we can see and touch and taste. And yet, because of propaganda and advertising, most of the world doesn't know that.
Just something's popped into my head, Mike, is in terms of marketing, advertising and products and consumerism, of course, is designed obsolescence, which feeds into this whole idea.
I was going to say, yes, we need to mention that as well, because the most biggest recorded mention of this happening was with the light bulbs.
Yes, of course, yeah.
So companies were making light bulbs to last longer and longer and longer.
Mm.
But suddenly, the light bulb manufacturers realised, well, hang on, if we make light bulbs last too long, how are we going to sell more?
We're
going to
be out of business.
Yeah. And that's what I was talking about, the change in how society is now serving the corporations, because the businesses were like, well, we need to survive. We need to continue our existence.
Mm.
So they actually had a conspiracy, and this was
a noted conspiracy,
of making sure light bulbs didn't last over like 200,000 hours, I believe it was.
Yeah.
Because if so, other light bulb manufacturers would find the ones that were making light bulbs that lasted longer. Mm.
And of course, some of these ideas are explored in the book, The Corporation and the Film.
Yeah.
And also, I would add that the development of the corporation at the same time, what we've seen is where society is basically set up to fulfill the needs of the corporation. Look at the cost to this planet, this beautiful planet.
Yeah. Progress is destroying Mother Earth to feed our materialistic desires.
We are literally destroying the very thing that we rely on for our survival.
Yes. I was going to say, there's a fantastic quote on a picture that's going around Facebook at the moment.
Mm.
It says, if trees gave out Wi-Fi signals, we would plant so many around the world.
I love that, yeah.
It's just a shame that they only produce the oxygen we breathe.
That's one aphorism that I actually, from Facebook, that I actually approve of. That's very good.
But it just goes to show that the way we think and act within our society, all based from how we're taught in school, in the propaganda, we're all set up to think in almost psychopathic ways.
Mm. Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Funny should we talk about Facebook. It brings us on to the internet. We can't talk about propaganda and not talk about the internet and social media.
Yeah.
In terms of things like misinformation, disinformation. I know myself from all my years, like you, Mike, of conspiracy research. There's a hell of a lot of disinformation out there, which is deliberately put out there to drag people down to an even lower level of consciousness, because it's all dark and it's not balanced with a kind of esoteric knowledge, and that used to be the kind of stuff that I lapped up the most.
Well, I have to admit, these days with social media, it's much more confusing than it used to be. You know, information was a case of you found a source of information. It might have been a documentary, a website, and it had some very compelling arguments on there, and you would read it.
Yeah.
But then you would actually check up on it.
Yeah, sure.
You double check, is this right? Are the sources correct? And sure, stuff like that.
Verify.
Yeah. But these days, you know, you'll see a quote on social media from your best friend, say, and because of the best friend, you're going to believe them so much more.
Yeah.
But they've just taken it from someone else who took it from someone else who took it from someone else. So back in the old days with TV, it tried to propagate an idea to you. Mm. Yeah. Tried to sell you an idea.
Mm.
You might take it, you might not. But these days, it's not, say, from some random guy from TV.
No.
It's your best mate doing it.
Sure.
And he's not doing it on purpose. It's just social media has essentially ramped up the propagation of these ideas.
Yeah. And again, the immediacy of it means that we almost don't feel the need to check. It's like, oh, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. I haven't got time to check.
Yeah, I'm on to something else.
Busy life.
Yeah, yeah. The internet is also interesting in terms of propaganda. Refer back to conspiracy, again, an area we're interested in. The whole flat earth phenomena. It's come to that point where we have to mention it. Sorry, Mike.
I was going to say, I'm not even sure where this one popped up from. It is just the insanity. I mean, the first person who mentioned flat earth to me, I just instantly thought they mistakenly were talking about the whole hollow earth.
Yeah.
And it wasn't until they corrected me and go, no, I mean flat earth. And I was just like, what idiocy are you talking about?
Oh, and it wasn't actually, Mike, until I got attacked, as you well know.
Oh,
on Facebook for dare questioning someone's belief system in the flat earth.
Oh yeah, I crapped up the popcorn on that one. Yeah, just
it was
sat back and watched.
It was hilarious. But joking apart, the propaganda element of this, I believe, is to discredit more credible, shall we say, conspiracy theories.
Well, it's how it goes with misinformation.
Yeah.
Because obviously we all know that conspiracies happen.
Yeah.
Look back in the past, they're always happening. And the fact is, there's no way of getting around it that they are happening.
Mm.
But through misinformation, you can discredit quite a lot of conspiracy theories by just saying, well, look at this one, or look at this one.
Sure.
Of course they're all crazy. Yeah,
this is obviously the powers that be, or probably intelligence agencies who recruit people to promulgate this stuff through the internet. I would, say that's what's going on. Because, of course, the internet is a very important territory now. As more and more of the younger generation are moving away from TV, the internet is the main theater.
Source, yeah.
Yeah.
Although I still think, with conspiracy theories, the tinfoil hat is a very good idea.
Yeah, the old Faraday cage, which we've mentioned.
Especially in the age of Wi-Fi.
Yeah, sure.
You need it more than ever.
Yeah. In the last section, we're just going to touch upon more extreme forms of propaganda, which, again, a lot of our listeners will be well aware of, is things like brainwashing and mind control in terms of MKUltra used in the military and things like that.
Yeah, so everything we've been talking up till now involves almost the carrot style.
So it's more subtle.
Yeah, it's trying to sell you an idea, but you still have to buy it.
Mm.
But brainwashing and mind control is the stick end of it, where it you don't get a choice in the matter. You're taking this on board.
Yeah, sure. So that might be, you know, the implantation of some military dude, a chip or something like that.
Yeah, it could. So with MKUltra, with trauma-based mind control, where it's actually making you experience real-life fears day in, day out, to then fracture your mind, to then implant certain ways for those fractures to end.
I'd also add, Mike, that trauma-based mind control, I think, also happened on 9/11, albeit in a more subtle way, in that the images, they showed those same images, like the planes, okay, going into the buildings over and over and over again.
Yeah, so that was trauma on a mass scale, because obviously it was going to everyone.
Mm. And recently, with the terrorist attacks in the airport in Brussels, they showed on the News 24, the BBC and Sky, the images of the people running away from the terminal, and they just kept repeating it over and over again, similarly, just to, you know, create a sense of fear in the viewing public.
I have to admit, I'm not sure about that one. I don't actually watch the news anymore.
Oh, right, okay. It's just me. I just watch it for just to see what the mainstream is getting out there. Do you know what I mean? To see what the hive public mind are thinking, really.
Fair enough. I can't blame you on that one. It's just I got fed up of the brainwashing.
And it's also the nauseating, patronising, smirking faces of the news readers, which again is just really annoying.
But I have to admit, going back onto the news, one thing that bugged me more than anything about the news is that half the news stories out there aren't even news stories, they're advertisements.
Yes, or they're just essentially promoting government policy, or they're testing to see what public reaction will be.
Yeah, so, you know, I mean, I hate ads more than anybody, so I just cut it out for that.
Yeah, it is very annoying.
Yeah.
So I think we'll look to wrap up, which has been a really interesting episode this week.
Yeah. So I just want to say that the first step into taking control of your life again is to realise the mechanisms of brainwashing, of propaganda, and how they control your life.
So just recognising the memes, recognising the techniques that are used,
by
being discerning, of course.
Yeah, because it's not until you recognise these things that you can actually stop them controlling your life.
Although I would say the insidious thing is that even you and I are unaware of the ways in which we're still being controlled.
Yeah, it's happening. It's, you know, it goes back to the whole onion theory.
Yeah.
It's happening in layers upon layers.
Sure, yeah.
But that is almost the spiritual path of peeling back these
layers.
That's
what it is, isn't
it? And one by one, you become slightly more awakened, slightly more enlightened each time.
Yeah.
But it's not an easy process.
No, we're both experiencing that, aren't we, at the moment, in particular.
This is the thing. Man cannot change without suffering.
No.
Because he is the marble and the sculptor.
Oh, I like that. Beautiful, beautiful.
So the question I want to leave everyone with is, so what aspects of propaganda are still controlling you?
I like that. Very good. Right, till next time, everyone. See you later.
Goodbye.